This is Seattle, Washington, March 26, 1988, 8 p.m. I propose to tape a discussion with Erling Sanis, Bismarck, North Dakota, concerning the organization of the Teamsters in South Dakota, North Dakota, and Western Iowa, 1937, 38, 39, and 40.
Short was the that he says was published in this Vox Populi at Sioux Falls.
Well, now that may be.
And
I thought the Vox Populi was the voice of the people, a column in the short paper. I may be wrong.
Okay, well, I'll check a little further on.
But I don't recall it.
Can't find it anyway. And if it was a paper, I'd sure like to get a hold of it.
Well, I can't recall that.
I've been writing all over and nobody seems to see it.
No, and I don't recall it either. I thought it was, you know, you have a column in the paper, Voice of the People.
Yeah, it sounds, what you say, it sounds reasonable.
Yeah, like they have the editorial column, the Vox Populi.
Yeah.
It was it means the Voice of the People, and I thought it was in the Unionist.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'll keep looking to that.
Yeah.
Did I mention to you that I was in Washington?
You told me that you were going. You didn't mention that you'd been there. You intended to go there.
Yeah, and I've been using the U.S. Conciliation Service file.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty good.
Well, you got a hold of Robert Woodard then. He was the guy, I guess, that was in there on the bakery strike. Wasn't that his name?
Well, yeah, he was in
LRB. Yeah.
But the U.S. Conciliation Service, there was a guy by the name of Michael Sherman.
Yeah, Michael Sherman and a guy by the name of Chin, Robert Chin or something.
I haven't run across that name.
Mm-hmm.
But the Sherman is going to be a pretty good one.
Yeah, he was a pretty sharp dude.
I also, when I was in Washington, took a look at a Justice Department file on that Framoff case.
Uh-huh.
That's quite an interesting file there. Oh, God, it's a huge file.
Well, it sure was a patent frame-up, I'll tell you.
Huh?
It was sure a frame-up.
Oh, it's unbelievable, you know, the stuff that's in that file.
Huh?
It's unbelievable, the stuff that's in that file.
One of the guys that done most of the legwork was a guy by the name of Coombs, C-O-O-M-B-S.
Yeah, there are lots and lots of reports from him.
Yeah, well, he was the guy that was assigned when he was a dirty little nitwit bastard.
He was called a special agent. I was going to ask you about him. Was he a special agent? Means that he probably wasn't a regular FBI agent, right?
He what?
That means that he was not a regular FBI
agent. Oh, yes, but he was just assigned to that case especially, I guess.
Yeah, I wonder what happened to him or what he did or...
I don't know. He probably died from the results of that. That was an awful sting. He went up there with a tape line and was measuring the county line and everything.
Did you realize that he had the Union Hall there in Sioux City under surveillance?
Oh, of course.
There's a report in there where he describes how he went to a photography shop and got a movie camera.
Yeah.
And installed it in the bank across the street. And had somebody there taking movie pictures of him.
Yeah, we knew he was around there. We knew they were there. Didn't bother us. We were carrying on our everyday business.
Yeah.
That son of a bitch, he went to the telephone company, made us put up a deposit on their telephone of $150 down payment before they shut off our service, and we had to pay $150 to get it reinstated. We weren't deadbeats. Oh, he was a stinker.
And this guy Foster also.
Homer Foster?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he was an awful son of a bitch.
And they've got his original statement that he gave. That's in the file.
Yeah.
Which is, and then, of course, when the trial started, a complete turnaround where he turned against people.
Huh? Well, you see what happened with him, as I told you earlier.
Yeah.
He was a detestable person to me when I first met him. But he was, I believe, he was the vice president of the union.
Yeah.
And he worked in the coal yard with Glenn Beeman. And, of course, he attended the union meetings and everything. And I was very careful not to ever be or say anything with him. And I told Fouts about him. I says, he makes my goddamn skin crawl. There's something sneaky about that bastard. Well, he had a way with dogs. And, had a kennel, and he had a good kennel business, I mean dog kennels, and he was raising breeding dogs. Well, his wife, she was a shrew. I remember her. I saw her a couple of times, and he got charged with statutory rape, one of the young girls, and well, she was mentally underdeveloped and physically overdeveloped girl, and he got in a compromising position with her more than once, and they used that on him. And of all the people, he said that he drove me up to some place in Iowa, Spirit Lake or something, and that we left, him and I, and that we stopped, and I left a dollar bill tip in a restaurant for a cup of coffee. Now, God Almighty, if you were out trying to do anything, you would try to be as outsidely quiet as you possibly could. Number one, I wouldn't have went across the street to have a cup of coffee with him, let alone riding a car with him. And why would I need a numbskull like that to drive my car? And oh, he was an awful bastard. He was a regular, and they threatened him that if he didn't testify against us, they manufactured the story that Coombs did. They were going to put him in Madison Penitentiary for 20 years because of statutory rape on this girl. The girl admitted that she didn't resist him and he didn't attack her or anything.
Yeah, but that's even in the file, you see, there's a reference in the file to him being estranged from his wife.
Yes.
This is Coombs' report.
Yeah.
And he refers to Foster living with this other woman.
Yeah, well,
and so the implications are, in those years, you know, when you're illegal cohabitation, whatever they call it, was kind of a serious crime down in Iowa, right?
Yeah, oh, it was horrible. Oh, we got really... They really hung the rigging on us there.
Huh? There sure is a lot of things in that file that raise those kinds of questions.
Huh? Oh, Christ Almighty. You know, when we went into...
Yeah, to see what they were doing with this movie camera, is they didn't have pictures of any of you guys. And they didn't know the names. They didn't even know who they were looking for.
No!
So they took these movies of...
And they went around the people that never seen these people before.
Exactly what they did.
Of course, we knew it. And when we went into the courtroom, they had Louis Miller on one end of the table and me on the other, and we were the bad guys, Lou and I. And so we sat on one end of the table, and I did, and Lou on the other, so that we could be... They tell these people exactly who we were. Oh, yes, that was not a very favorable... That certainly wasn't a very friendly atmosphere, that whole damn thing.
You remember Lou Miller's brother, the priest?
Yes, Charles, Papa Chuck.
Yeah, they were twin brothers, identical twins, as I understand it.
No, I didn't know that.
And somebody told me that the priest wanted to... change clothes with Lou.
I didn't ever know that they were identical twins. I don't believe that. He was older.
I don't know, but that was the priest's scheme, is that he wanted to get Lou, you know, out of this. And
Bullshit. Never heard of that.
Okay.
I never heard of that.
Okay.
Lou had been in the bucket before two or three times for robbing banks in Missouri.
Whatever it was.
Yeah, but he had a parish out in middle of Missouri someplace. Lou and I went out and visited him one time for 3 or 4 days. But they weren't twin brothers.
Oh.
No, that's a myth. Well, I don't know, was that in the file?
Not in the file, but somebody else that I talked to, Jack, is David Weinberg.
Oh, Weinberg?
Yeah.
Did you talk to him? Is he still alive?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
And Weinberg is the one that told me this.
Well, we had them stories in there. Weinberg was a lawyer. Is he still alive?
Oh, yeah, and he's still practicing law.
The hell he is.
I went to visit him.
No? Has he got a family, I wonder? Did
I
you tell
know.
Him I was alive?
Well, Jack, I didn't. When I go around talking to people,
I see.
I don't usually mention your
name.
Because you and I had kind of an agreement, you know.
Yeah, well, we had a. Yeah. We hired him right out of law school, you know.
Yeah, so I thought that. So if I tell you that I talk to him, if you want me to...
No, I wouldn't. Yeah, but he's still practicing law in Omaha.
But he mentioned you, though.
Yeah.
And, of course, a lot of people mention you, Janet.
Yeah, they probably do.
And I've never...
Yeah, well, you know, we hired him right out of law school.
Right.
And he thought that we were hiring him because he was a smart lawyer. He couldn't get his hand out of a lard pail. But the reason we hired him was he was in the firm... And the senior member of that firm was Canazzo, who was the city attorney. And we were in all sorts of A and B charges around town there.
Oh, yeah.
Assault and battery. And we got the lawyer out of his firm up defending our people. Well, that's the only reason we hired Weinberg, not because he knew anything. We had to tell him what to say.
Had been out of law school for 2 years and hadn't been able to get a job.
Well, we give him $50 a month.
He was starving to death and was ready to pick up and go back to Missouri where he came from, and then people came along.
He don't know why we hired him.
But he certainly has a great fondness for you, Jack.
Yeah?
Al Russell, and of course...
Al Russell?
Yeah, Al Russell was a favorite of his.
Yeah, and Tommy Smith?
Of course, Farrell.
Yeah.
But Dave tells me that I guess Farrell probably is the person that initially contacted him. I don't know.
No.
Whoever it was, but he told me about Farrell's dislike for lawyers.
Yeah. No, it wasn't Farrell that sorted him out. Pollock and I figured it out.
Is that the one?
Yeah. That's how we got him.
Well, he remembers you, and he just has all kinds of kind things to say about you, Jack.
Yeah, well...
But I didn't acknowledge to him that
You know, one time I'll tell you something. He was always telling us, we were in trouble, didn't he tell you? We were in trouble all the time. And he was always telling us, you should have come to me first. So we got a couple of big truck drivers. They got a violin box. And we told him, now look, Dave, we want you to go with us tonight. And we got a little problem, and he got in the car, and we had him in front. And we had these two truck drivers in the back. One of them was Lard Ryan. He was big and heavy, that's why we called him Lard. And the other guy was Friday Melton. And he weighed about 280. And they were all in overcoats. And Tommy and I had Dave Weinberg in the middle. And Weinberg liked to eat. And he liked to eat, especially when somebody else was by him. And so we started talking, and we said, now, Dave, you've been always telling us that if we pull any rough stuff, you should be with us. Well, this time we're going to take a guy away. And a couple of years earlier, they'd had that Kansas City massacre.
Yeah.
We says, they're coming through with a friend of ours going to Chicago, and we're going to take him away from the FBI. We could feel Dave shaking. And we said, well, Tom says, wait till I go and make a call, find out what's up. Well, he said, the train's a little late. We'll drive around a little. And we drove out to a regular, one of the best steakhouses in the road. Out in South Omaha. We says, come on in, Dave, we're going to eat before we snatch it. The train's going to be late tonight. He could hardly eat there. But we used to pull stunts on him every once in a while, you know. But we hired him because Ralph Carnazzo, C-A-R-N-O-Z-Z-O,
yeah, I've seen that name,
was the city attorney. Well, what better a guy could you have to get people out of jail when you had a lawyer from the firm that had the city, you know, he was the city attorney, but that's where he come from. We figured we had a pretty good in there. Could get in. That's why we hired up there until after he'd been appointed general organizer to open his office there.
Oh, yeah.
Lou and I figured out Dave Weinberg, and we told Tommy Smith about it. Tommy was the secretary treasurer. But Pollock was the brain there. He was the brain, and he had the think tank, and he had the guts to go with it.
Now, who is Pollock now?
Lou Miller.
Okay, that's what I thought I was.
Yeah. Louis Anton Milagovich was his real name. And we used to call him the Pollock. The Pollock.
Weinberg has been an attorney for the Teamsters all these years, I understand.
Has he?
Right.
Oh, he's pretty fat then.
Oh, yeah.
Is he a big man now? He was tall.
Well, he's put on a little weight, you know. He's still a nice looking, you know, trim man.
Well, he's about, he's in his 60s now.
60s, so he must be older than that.
Oh, not much more.
50 years ago.
Oh, yes, by God, yes, yes.
Went through law school and he was out for a couple years.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. What the hell, I was only 26. He was all as old as I am. He's in his 70s. He must be pretty wealthy if he's been a Teamster attorney all that time.
I don't know. He told me that, he was telling me about, you know, he has a great fondness for Farrell.
Yeah.
And I think that he and Farrell must have been in contact over the years because Weinberg told me that, that Farrell sent him autographed copies of all of the books.
Oh, yes, he did, yeah.
So I'm sure that they weren't.
Yeah, know, that's true.
Some kind of contact. But one thing that's kind of interesting that about a couple things that Weinberg drafted the little NLRB Act for W.W. Murray in North Dakota, he told me.
You know what?
The little NLRB, are you familiar with some states that enacted that into their state labor legislation?
No, I don't.
Yeah, some states have that.
And he drafted it?
For W.W. Murray.
For W.W. Murray?
Murray was the president of the North Dakota AFL.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
And the second thing that was kind of interesting is that Weinberg told me that was talking to me about the hot cargo clause that Farrell put in some of those early contracts, agreements.
Yeah?
You remember that?
Well, we had it in there, yeah. It's still there. Never was taken out.
And Papa hired Weinberg to argue the hot cargo case before the United States Supreme Court.
I never knew that.
1967.
I never knew that.
I didn't either. And I don't...
No, I never heard of that. And, I wonder if he's telling the story.
Well, he mentioned the case. I wasn't too interested in it.
You know, he quit practicing law for a while and went making furniture. With one of the Jeffries boys.
Oh.
Yeah. There's a family of Jeffries in the Lincoln area. There's a whole bunch of them. There was more Jeffries than there was the James boys. They were all over. There's a half a dozen of them.
But one thing Weinberg told me, though, is that he said that, you know, he didn't have anything to do with writing the hot cargo clause, but it was you and Cheryl that, that wrote the language. And, you know, and... he himself really didn't have anything to do with it, but years later, in Hoffa, when this hot cargo clause came up before the Supreme Court, and I don't know just how it got to the court.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Hoffa remembered that Weinberg down in Omaha, Hoffa thought Weinberg had something to do with drafting the clause in that initial
He didn't have nothing to do with drafting that language.
But that's what he said, you know, that he said that Hoffa didn't know that, but he knew that he didn't have anything to do with it because you and Farrell were the guys that drafted it.
That's right. But we drafted the agreement.
Right.
And Lou Miller. Lou Miller had a hand in some of it. Uh-huh. But we put that together in Minneapolis mostly. And some of the stuff there that, I don't know what he means by the hot cargo clause. If you're on writing terms with him, you might ask him and drop him a line and what he had in mind on that hot cargo clause.
What that had to do with, I think, Jack, I didn't really presently, because I was just there to listen to the interesting guy and I didn't ask a lot of questions. But I think what it had to do with, and you people had some problem with Brady.
With Brady Motor Freight.
Yeah, and...
Oh, geez, I had nothing but trouble with that settlement.
It had to do with some of the Brady... I had somebody else call some, you know, something was confused. assigned to Brady.
Yeah.
And Brady came to the terminal there in Sioux City or Sioux Falls, Sioux City to pick up the cargo. And of course, Brady, this was before Brady signed the contract. And the union wouldn't, you know, allow them to.
Well, that's wrong. That's wrong. Brady didn't operate during the time the contract was not signed. He wasn't operating when the strike was on.
Okay, the next time we talk, Jack, I'll dig some things out of my notes and then I'll...
Yeah, because you see...
I've got some newspaper accounts that have to do with Brady and another firm now, and I can't...
Holcroft?
No, not Holcroft, no.
Watson?
Anyway, there was a court action there in Sioux City, and the court...
Oh, Jesus, there was a place where bustling with court actions.
Yeah, but the court ordered the...
Was it James Way?
Huh?
James Way?
It could be. I'll dig it out.
And yeah.
I'll give you the exact time and details the next time we talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll ask Weinberg more about the hot cargo.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. We had them nailed down pretty well on that hot cargo.
Yeah. Well, that's what Weinberg said, is that the Farrell was concerned that with the union agreement that everything seemed to be covered, but this provision for what he called hot cargo.
It couldn't have been the time we had that big beef with the Burlington Northern, was it?
I don't know.
When we had it with Tossig? Yeah, we had one there. We had him for 3 days on that one.
Uh-huh.
And the guy didn't know we had his trucks tied up.
Oh. Okay. Well,
he told us we couldn't do it. And the terminal manager says he called him over. He says, Christ almighty, we've been tied up for 10 days. He just about went eight.
I'll take a look at my...
Yeah, I'd appreciate that, yeah. But Weinberg got pretty good offices.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. I think he owns the building.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
Oh, God, he's got a beautiful suite of offices there. His son is with him, I think.
Huh?
He has a son that's with him.
Yeah.
David Weinberg Jr.
Uh-huh.
I didn't meet him, but I have the senior.
Mm-hmm. Do you have your address?
I do, Jack. And I don't have it right in front of me.
Yeah, you can drop it in the mail for me.
I'll send it to you in the mail.
I'd appreciate it.
Give you his telephone number.
Yeah, well, I ain't going to call him because I'd want him to call me.
Uh-huh. But sure, had a lot of nice things to say about you, though.
Yeah, well, he didn't have any reason not to rap me, you know. We,
that's right. And,
we learned him a lot, to be honest with you. We taught him a lot of law that he didn't learn in law school.
And I kind of got that impression talking to him that he was, that's kind of, I think, the way he feels about it, too.
What?
That he learned a lot from you guys.
You're goddamn whistling.
Yeah.
Christ, we... Well, I don't want to go into it now. It ain't the time to do it. Poor Dave, he was nervous.
Dave tells me that one of the reasons that he got in on this truck case that we're talking about was that Farrell didn't trust Conley.
Huh?
That Farrell didn't trust Conley and McNutt.
In
Des Moines.
In Des Moines.
Yeah.
No.
That Farrell had some reservations, I don't know if it's...
Well, now, what case is he talking about?
That's the Sioux City truck case.
No, we did not trust Conley.
Yeah.
The reason we did not trust Conley, we didn't trust Coyle first.
Oh.
See? We had more distrust of Coyle.
Who was Coyle?
Coyle, Carl Coyle was the business agent.
Oh, yeah, now I know, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Huh? First, we didn't trust Carl Coyle. And Conley was thicker shit to the blanket with the governor of Iowa.
Oh, okay.
And Conley was a political guy. Now, McNutt wasn't too bad a guy, but he was the junior partner done that deliberately because we felt that Henry Munt had gone to school with the judge. The judge was a Republican. And we felt, Thurl and I talked it over, we felt that this guy would be, we didn't want to be represented by the same counsel first. Weinberg wasn't heavy enough in the britches to represent anybody. We had Canazzo, I think, representing the guys from Omaha. Weinberg wasn't there. It was too big a job for him. And Henry Munt was my lawyer. And his brother was Carl Munt. And Henry Munt went to school with the judge that sentenced us. And he was an old son of a bitch, a diehard Republican. And we also hired a guy that was a public defender. We put him on the payroll, too, for $600. Well, we done some conniving in there. We might have gotten life if we hadn't. But we didn't have Weinberg on the payroll, I don't think. But on the other thing, no, we didn't. We were more fearful of Carl Coyle than we were of Connolly.
Oh.
But we never told that to Dave Weinberg.
Okay.
Because, after all, you don't trust lawyers, no matter who they are.
Right.
That was our rules. Because they got a bond, you know, between them. And that's greater than any appreciation of laymen that they have. There's very few of those lawyers you can trust.
I know.
And, our greatest fear there was Carl Coyle. And Carl Coyle was a rising young guy, and they wanted Carl Coyle for the business that would come out of the Teamsters and the labor movement. And they would listen more to Coyle than they would to us. And we didn't want Carl Coyle. See, Coyle is the guy, when we had Brady over the barrel, Brady said he'd sign, but he couldn't afford to because he had a lot of bills, and we knew it. Coyle wanted to sign. And I said, no. Brady wanted to sign, and he started making the payments, start paying the men 6 weeks later. I said, oh, God damn it, Coyle. When he signs that agreement, he'll start paying the men. He ain't going to get me where there's going to be 6 weeks lag. I'll never live that down. So he went to Farrell about me. Carl did. Farrell says, Maloney's right. And, Carl was a wheeler and a dealer. Oh, I got some papers around here where he was behind our back trying to line up people, and we were out trying to establish minimum wages, and he was telling guys, well, if you sign them up for any old thing and get them under contract. He wasn't fighting for the standard wage. First time we met him, that's what he was trying to do, was Joe below us. And when the strike was on, he didn't have enough guts. Farrell and I and Pollock Miller had to go over and sell the agreement for him. He was afraid.
In Des Moines, right?
In Des Moines. And hell, the men knew what the score was. Carl was afraid of him. And he sold out in the end. He became a Tobin hack. I don't know where he's at.
I don't know. I never asked any questions about him.
Well, Weinberg might know.
I don't think he's living out there. He was
Coyle? He'd be pretty old. But Weinberg's got to be 75, come to think of it.
Yeah, I think he is.
Does he look old?
No, he doesn't.
He never looked. He looked young, you know.
I guess my first impression would be that he was about 55, 60.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was struggling along, and when we give him a retainer, I think at $50 a month, he just about fell off the floor. He didn't know what to do, to be honest.
Jack, I have to, my tape's running out. I have to go.
All right.
When can I talk to you again?
Well, now I tell you, I got a busy schedule. Our convention's going to start on the 11th of April.
Okay.
And from there, I'm coming back here, and I'm going to be gone from the 19th. And I won't be back here till the 28th, and I may be in California then for a few days after that. So we'll have to be after that time.
All about like all the 7th of May?
Let's see. The 7th. Well, we can try it. If I'm here, all right.
Okay,
if not, I can drop you a note that I won't be.
Okay. Tentatively the 7th at the same
yeah.
time? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and drop me Dave's mail. Address.
And when we talk next time, Jack, I wonder if we can kind of switch to North Dakota.
All right.
And I'd kind of like to get back to 1935 in North Dakota.
All right.
And really appreciate your help, Jack.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Bye now.
All right.
This is Seattle, Washington. Saturday, May 19th. I intend to tape a discussion with Erling Sanis discussing the Teamsters organization activities in South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, 1937, 38, 39, and 40.